Support for The Full Story comes from Long Wharf Theater, creating theater of, for, and by the people of Greater New Haven. Everyone's story has a place at Long Wharf. You belong.
History is being dug up in the Hamptons. Construction of multi-million dollar homes revealed the skeletal remains of an ancient Native American person. Tribal leaders want the desecration of their burial ground to stop. This is The Full Story on WSHU. I'm Rebecca Saran in for Ron Ropiak. The Shinnecock Indian Nation is a federally recognized tribe in eastern Long Island. Their territory is more than 1,000 acres in the town of Southampton. Half of the tribe's 1,500-person enrollment live there. The land we're talking about today is off the reservation in a community called Shinnecock Hills. In 2018, ancient remains of a Shinnecock person were found at a construction site. The tribe protested to have the land saved to prevent the destruction of the burial ground. But archaeologically sensitive land is still being developed. Joining us now are members of the Shinnecock Indian Nation, and they all have a role in the protest to temporarily stop development in the area. Brian Polite is the chairman of the Tribal Trustees. Tila Trong is an attorney for the tribe. Rebecca Genia is a Shinnecock representative to the Intertribal Historic Preservation Task Force. And Shane Weeks is co-chair of Graves Protective Warriors Society. Welcome to you all.
Thank you.
All right. Well, Brian, I'd like to start with you. What happened in 2018 with the excavation of the remains? Tell us a little bit more about that.
Well, a couple of years ago, we had human remains found in an area of the Hamptons known to be the Shinnecock Hills. Thanks to the efforts of our Grave Warrior Protection Society, Ms. Becca Genia and Shane Weeks, and also Ms. Denise Silva Dennis, we were able to work with the town of Southampton to acquire the parcel and also to repatriate the remains of our ancestor.
And there is a belief that the way the remains that were uncovered along with, I think it was an 18th century bottle, indicated that this was a person of prestige within the tribe. Is that correct?
Correct. Well, the area itself was known as an ancient burial ground to some of our most revered leaders.
And Rebecca, what is happening today? I know there recently have been protests.
Well, today, literally today, they're desecrating our Shinnecock Hills. Once again, permits have been given to the developers to go ahead and continue to rip the heart out of our hills. And we are very much protesting the desecration of our ancient burials and our ancestral territory, which are well known, and as recently as 1902, taking ancestors out of the egregious damage was done to the to numerous burial mounds during the construction of the Shinnecock Hills Golf Course. And to this day, we keep having to protest because they will not adopt laws to protect our ancient burials. And also, we have asked for years and years, decades, to purchase, preserve, and protect. So we're just about to kick it up a notch over here in Shinnecock and, stay on the case and in their face about it. This has got to stop. This desecration of our ancestral territories has got to stop. Our ancestors are crying, and so are we.
But, Tila, my understanding is that the town agreed that this was wrong to destroy this grave and took action. So what changed?
Correct. So in 2018, the town created a joint task force with members of the Shinnecock Nation. I sit on that along with Shane Weeks and Becky. And our work is to get together as a committee and pick out these parcels within the Shinnecock Hills that are eligible for preservation. We are working to protect and preserve every single vacant acre, every single lot in the Shinnecock Hills, to hopefully have those lots acquired by the Southampton Town CPF Board. Unfortunately, what happened was this site previously had a home on it, a very, very small home, so it was overlooked by that committee. Although Shane, Becky, and myself did bring it up numerous times in our committee work, it was overlooked by the town board. So today we did receive an apology from the town supervisor, but unfortunately that's not enough to stop what's happening. It's not enough to stop the desecration, and it's not enough. In 1859, this land was stolen from us by the town of Southampton, by the state of New York, and they continue to this day in 2020 to desecrate our most sacred burial sites, which are well known to the town, which are well known to the Shinnecock Nation. This site in particular, 513 Montauk Highway, was designated in 1990 as a culturally sensitive area by all three members, all three parties, the Shinnecock Nation, the New York State, and the town of Southampton. So it's just unacceptable that this is continuing and that we have to be protesting every single day against this overdevelopment and desecration of our sacred Shinnecock Hills.
All right, so, but Tila, has there been, whether it be mapping or surveys that this committee has done, that there are, you know, very clearly marked, there's paperwork online clearly identifying these areas so that it's indisputable?
Yes. So that paperwork is in existence. It's been documented over the years. We're coming across issues where every time there's a newly elected official, whether it be the CPF director is newly new to their position and not aware of the previous work that we've done. It's decades of paperwork that we have. We have so many maps. It's not a secret anymore. At this point, we consider it to be intentional because we do have so much documentation that this is sacred land, that this is burial areas, and these are ancient burials that we're talking about. The burials at 513 Montauk date back to at least 1300 BC. So these have been documented for decades, for centuries. We have maps from 1702 designated these as sacred burial areas. So it's no secret anymore. It's not something that we should be having to protest. New York State needs to pass legislation to protect human remains. New York State is one of only four states that does not have laws on the books to protect Native American burial grounds, and we want Southampton to really be on the forefront, and we want Southampton to be a model for the rest of the state and be the first to enact solid legislation with penalties to protect Native burial sites.
So, Shane, is part of the challenge for the tribe the fact that this property is not on the reservation? It's not on site, therefore it's a barrier for the tribe to stop construction and to stop the exploitation of these sites?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, it's part of that land that Taylor was talking about that was stolen in the mid-1800s. And we've never stopped fighting for our land and those sensitive areas that are within our ancestral territory's boundaries. And so for us, we have to figure out an avenue in today's world to be able to protect and preserve our ancestral remains, our ancestral sacred spots, and to be able to preserve that for future generations and just know that we're not going to give up this fight for as long as we can help it.
I understand, Brian, that there's a process that the town has to follow when it comes to these different sites. Proper consultation. Explain to me further about that process. What has to happen?
Well, the process goes back prior to this incident. And basically, when a developer goes to the town board to acquire a permit, they're supposed to, the town board and also the applicant is supposed to give a letter of consultation or make us aware, the Shinnecock Indian Nation aware, so that we can do our own internal review to ensure that it's not in a site that might be culturally sensitive, and that wasn't done. And as Ms. Trost stated, we did receive an apology from the town supervisor, but obviously that's not enough. And that process wasn't followed.
It seems a little unusual. In other words, has this been a kind of a pattern of behavior? Go ahead. If it becomes a problem, just apologize.
I would say that there's been oversights, and I'm not going to get into the psyche of the town board, but I just know that there's been oversights on things that should have, protocol that should have been followed that was not followed. And as a result, we find ourselves in a position, like my Aunt Becky said so eloquently today, we shouldn't have to stand in front of every bulldozer every time this happens. or be out there every time. There's protocols set up so that we can preempt a lot of these incidents.
And Rebecca, how is the community, the residents in the area, how are they reacting?
Some people are very supportive. Some people hate our guts, but, you know, we got to keep on going. And, you know, about the apology from the supervisor today, that's the first time, really, I have ever heard even a slight, even though very slight, apology at all. It's usually they make every excuse, every justification to they can't preserve any property, or why all the permits were put in place. And up till today, I have never heard an apology. And this is, even though it was just, it doesn't do us any good, but that's what it's always been in the past. And I do believe that reflects a lot of, probably 90% of the neighbors in our area is exactly what the town supervisor is saying. You know, oh, well, sorry. And it's always a matter of money. Well, one thing you can't tell me, Southampton, is you don't have the money. That's one thing I don't want to hear from Southampton. Yeah, it seems like you have to stay within your guidelines when it comes to helping us protect and preserve the hills, but you can spend millions and millions of dollars on the smallest situations, or, you know, whatever. It's like a pick and choose kind of thing, and it's really very frustrating, and sometimes I get carried away. But
well, Tila, is there a solution, do you think, where the town, the community, the Shinnecock people, that they're all going to be happy in the end? Is there a compromise that could be reached here?
Yes, it's very simple, actually, and it's the same thing that we've been asking for years, is for Southampton Town to codify laws, pass legislation to protect these burial sites. It's time. It's 2020. It's a brand new year. We can make this happen, and we can prevent this from happening again.
Okay, Rebecca Genia, Tila Trogue, Shane Weeks, Brian Plight, stay with us. We're going to continue our conversation. We'll take a short break. You're listening to The Full Story. Stay with us. And welcome back to The Full Story on WSHU. I'm Rebecca Saran in for Ron Ropiak. We are speaking with members of the Shinnecock Indian Nation about the preservation of their ancestry and the need for rules to prevent the desecration of tribal burial grounds. Joining us today is Brian Plight, chairman of the Tribal Trustees. Tila Trogue is an attorney with the tribe. Rebecca Genia is the Shinnecock representative to the Intertribal Historic Preservation Task Force. And Shane Weeks is a co-chair of the Graves Protection Warriors Society. Nice to have you all back with us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It's a little confusing in the fact that we're talking about Shinnecock Hills. We're in Southampton on Long Island, but it's also called Sugarloaf Hill. Brian, explain to us what the significance, the difference is, and the significance of Sugarloaf Hill specifically to your tribe.
Well, it's still part of what we consider the Shinnecock Hills area. In particular, a lot of our background, we weren't, the current land where we are right now, which is called the Neck, was not really used by us as residents, or didn't. So the Sugarloaf Hill in the Shinnecock Hills area is a very culturally sensitive site because we have a lot of history over there as far as our ancestors living and residing there. But also, more importantly, our ancient burial grounds were in that area.
And Rebecca, why doesn't the tribe have ownership of Sugarloaf Hill?
Well, it was stolen from us in 1859. We were just relocated to what they call the Neck, which is basically surrounded by swamps. And we were expected to die of swamp fever within two generations, but we didn't, thank goodness. But the Sugarloaf Hill meant so much to us because in Native culture, in ours, especially ours, I don't know, in our culture, in our heritage, the chiefs were buried, the chiefs and his family were buried on the highest point of the territory so that they could watch out for their people even after death. So Sugarloaf means that much to us because that's where Chiefs Munguntuxi and his sons and daughters were buried, Mamawitu, Noidana, Aquashawam. Those are our burials of our chiefs and their families especially at the point of contact, like in 1640, when we still had native names, and then everything kind of went downhill after that. But
Tila,
we know.
Oh, go ahead.
That's where they were buried. That's where our chiefs of our tribe were buried. And it seems like after that, you know, the coming of the Europeans in 1640 and on, you know, our society, our culture, you know, diminished, went downhill. We were stricken with disease from the European settlers and alcoholism, which introduced us to rum, which was called Niepa Machiskun, the devil's water. And then they began to, I mean, they settled here in June of 1640, and by December of 1640, they had already stolen a nice huge chunk of land. So it all went downhill from there. But Sugarloaf is where we laid our ancient dead.
And Tila, why did the tribe not have any recourse with regard to ownership of that land?
The tribe, immediately after the hills was stolen in 1859, what happened was the town of Southampton had collected a bunch of names off of our gravestones and sent a petition to Albany, to the New York State Legislature in 1859, asking for basically a land transfer of 3,500 acres of our Shinnecock Hills in exchange for a deed to the Shinnecock Neck. Immediately after we found out that this had happened, we started protesting. We filed a petition in the New York State Supreme Court. We went up to the legislature. We testified in Washington, D.C. We fought every single way that we could. We did everything that we could to raise money, to hire lawyers. In 1978, a lot of tribes were starting a new thing called federal recognition. So we actually had NARF, the Native American Rights Fund, put in a petition for us. And the basis of our petition was that our land was stolen in 1859. So we submitted that to the United States government. And the government said, okay, we acknowledge that you have this land claim for the Shinnecock Hills, but we can't do anything until we federally acknowledge your existence as an Indian tribe. So that was another 30-year legal battle that we eventually won in 2010, which gave us federal recognition. So at that point, we continued our claim for our Shinnecock Hills, and we got all the way up to the Second Circuit. The Second Circuit is typically known as a place where Indian land claims go to die. So not unexpectedly, but still heartbreakingly enough, the Second Circuit did deny our land claim. We did appeal to the United States Supreme Court around 2015, 2016, but the Supreme Court failed to hear that. So we do continue to fight, and we do continue to make our land claim for the Shinnecock Hills. There are a number of other options that we can explore in the future, but we never gave up that fight, and we've been fighting for the Shinnecock Hills since the day that they were stolen in 1859.
And speaking of that, the Native American and Colonial Graves Protection legislation has been presented, Shane, to the Southampton Town Board. It's been presented over and over again since 2003. What's the likelihood 2020 is the year that's enacted?
We're looking at a time right now where there is a lot of pressure on the town board to get these laws passed. So we're hopeful. As you said, you know, this has been ongoing for well over a decade. So, I mean, the best thing we can do is just be persistent about it. And at some point, hopefully one of the town boards that we encounter will have a conscience of protecting our graves as well as theirs.
And Brian, what do you see happening next?
Well, we had a good meeting today with the town board as far as moving certain things forward. Specifically, we are looking for a law to codify and memorialize the things that we just discussed about us being informed, but also severe criminal penalties for any bones that are found and then disregarded, because I think one of the important things in this whole issue is that has happened in the past. And so what we're going to be doing and fighting for very hard over the next few months is pushing the town board on legislation that reflects what we think needs to happen as far as criminal penalties and consultation.
And Rebecca, very briefly, how do you keep the next generation as engaged and taking this issue and the tribe as urgently as you do and your present team members?
Oh, it's already happening. I mean, Shane, he's only 2-3 years older than my grandson. And Tila, you know, we were there since she was born. And another tribal attorney who was Tila's cousin, you know, we've known all of these kids since the day they were born. And my Aunt Chi-Chi, who passed away 4 years ago, we were with her. She was 85 when she passed away. So we were all together in this Graves Protection, and several of the Graves Protection people have gone on to the spirit world since, you know, at least since the 2003 distributing of this legislation to the Southampton Town Board. And I have brought many a grandchildren to town board meetings, and I have 6 great-grandchildren now. And, yes, we will pass this on. This is intergenerational right now. It always has been. It always will be. This is our life. We are fighting to honor our ancestors. This is our life. This is what it's about. If you do not honor your ancestors, then we have nothing left. And we teach our children that, and they teach us a whole lot, and we're in this together, intergenerational, and for the nation, for the love of our ancestors.
Well, we want to thank you all for sharing your story with us today and the good fight that you've been putting forward. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you.
Brian Polite, Tribal Trustees Chairman of the Shinnecock Indian Nation, Tila Trogue, an attorney for the tribe, Rebecca Genia, and Shane Weeks also work to protect graves in different tribal committees. This is the full story on WSHU. You can listen to our podcasts on iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, or wherever you get your podcasts. We're going to speak with the town of Southampton now, where the Shinnecock Indian Nation Reservation is located. Well, the town also includes a residential neighborhood called Shinnecock Hills. The tribe has held rallies there for several weeks to try to preserve land where they say their ancestors are buried. Remains were found at a construction site in 2018. Now, you can email us at tfs@wshu.org or message us on Facebook at Full Story WSHU if you'd like to join in the conversation. Joining me now is Jay Schneiderman. He is the Southampton Town Supervisor. Thanks for joining us today.
How are you?
Doing just fine. Let's go back to 2018 when these remains were discovered. What did the town do? What was the response?
There was a construction site. They had put in a they dug a hole for the foundation of a home, and they encountered bones. And of course, in this case, it's perhaps there are times where we're not notified. In this case, we were notified, and the police went to the site. The medical examiner was brought in, and it was determined that it was likely from the Shinnecock Nation, which is what they had assumed all along. You know, we tried to halt construction. It's interesting because the state really doesn't have a law that says you have to stop building, but we were able to work with the developer in this case to stop construction on the site, and we worked toward preserving that site. We're able to reach an agreement where the owner would sell the property to the town and the site would be restored, and so that did have a happy ending. The human remains obviously were left intact, and some ceremonies were done by the Shinnecock Nation. But that area of Shinnecock Hills is known to be the ancient burial ground for the Shinnecock Nation. So it's highly sensitive, culturally sensitive area to them. And lots of homes through the years have been built in that area, and the town probably doesn't have enough laws in place to protect those, the possibility of disturbance to human remains.
Yeah, so what are there any procedures in place for how the town should monitor archaeological discoveries?
Yeah, there are some. There are some maps that, where there are certain procedures in place where you may have to do basic archaeology. Sometimes it's just the review of the historical record. It doesn't even rise to doing any kind of archaeological digs. So that really is a problem. And many, so somebody has a lot single lot that they're looking to develop, there often are no triggers whatsoever. They can just go ahead and build a home there. In the case that the current lot that has caused controversy lately, that was a subdivision, so it did go through the planning board, and the planning board did require some basic archaeology, but no digging at that site. So I'm looking at two different types of legislation, one that would require what's called stage two archaeology, so going beyond the literature search and actually doing some minor excavation at the site, some core samplings, and also what to do if you do encounter human remains, so that it would require a cessation of construction activities and would give the town an opportunity to look at acquiring the land or developing an avoidance plan or a reinterment plan or a way to make sure that the sanctity of that burial is protected.
Are the Shinnecock are the Shinnecock any members of the tribe allowed to be on site when part of the building process, the excavating doesn't go on forever, so it's a short window of time. Is a member of the tribal nation allowed to be on site in one of these areas that could potentially
currently,
be a burial
no.
site?
Currently, no. These are their private properties. If a property owner consented to having a member there, if a law was passed that would give them that opportunity, so that there was some coordination when the excavator was there digging the hole, or at least maybe an anthropologist, archaeologist present. We do have equipment now, too, that the town owns. It's 3D imaging equipment called ground-penetrating radar, where we can actually look at a site without disturbing it at all to determine if there is the potential for past burials at that property.
But then you have to go back to the developer, though. It's really in their hands, isn't it?
To a large degree, because the codes don't require those measures be taken. Right now, we're basically going to the developers and asking for consent. The current controversy is over a lot where, the developer already has a buyer for a particular house at that site. I believe that there's a contract in place, and he has to deliver that home within a certain, within a certain time frame. And, and now this controversy has erupted, rightfully so. It is in a very sensitive area. And, we're trying to, we're trying to come up with some mitigative type of measures, maybe going through some of the dirt that's there that's been excavated and screening it to see if there are any potential artifacts. It's not just human remains. This is their early habitation area. So there might be other types of artifacts that are important to the historical record.
Well, I know that the Shinnecocks, since 2003, have had this piece of legislation, the Native American and Colonial Graves Protection Legislation, wanting to get this through. What's the likelihood that could happen in 2020?
Well, there is state legislation that I think is tied up in committee, and it's pretty far-reaching. I don't know what the prospects of that. It certainly would be better to have this done at the state level, not just at the local level. But I did draft a law that would establish a protocol for what to do if you do encounter human remains or you think you may have encountered human remains. I think it's a pretty good law.
So what would that mean? So in other words, a developer's on site, they're excavating for a foundation, and they uncover remains thought to be human. What would your proposal have them do?
Well, there's a series of many steps, but the first step is notifying the police and stopping construction. And then, first it has to be determined that it is human remains. It could be a deer carcass. It could be something else. Of course, if it is human remains, it could be potentially a homicide, right? It doesn't necessarily have to be a burial. It doesn't have to be ancient. It could be something from a few decades ago. So it's determining the origin of that human the human remains, the age of the human remains. Let's assume that it is a burial. Then you would have to then figure out is it a soul burial, or what are the extents of this, the burial area? Are there other burials in this area? There are so many different steps and so many different agencies and stakeholders that get notified in this process. But it does move fairly quickly. One of my biggest concerns is if we create too onerous a process that developers, would be unethical and potentially illegal, but they would, that my concern is that they would look the other way and, push the bones in a different direction, rebury them, and pretend they never saw it.
All right.
That would be horrible.
Well, we want to thank you for, we're out of time, unfortunately, but thank you for giving us the town's perspective on this.
Absolutely.
All right. You're listening to The Full Story. We'll be back. Are part of The Full Story. I'm Rebecca Saran, and for Ron Ropiak, we are talking about how communities protect, or should protect, the discovery of ancient Native American remains, artifacts, and culture. Joining me now is Shannon O'Loughlin. She's an attorney and the executive director of the Association on American Indian Affairs. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you. So happy to be here.
Let's talk about the protections a federally and state-recognized tribe like the Shinnecock Indian Nation receive under current law. Now, Shinnecock people are supposed to benefit from protections under the Federal Native American Graves Protection and Repatriation Act. What does that act do?
Absolutely. And the Native American Graves Protection and Repatriation Act is called NAGPRA. And this year, later on this year, we'll be celebrating the 30th anniversary of the passage of that act. What that does for graves protection is it applies to tribal and federally owned lands. So it would not apply to the property that we're talking about today. But it applies to those lands and provides a permitting process, and it also requires the tribe to consult and participate in the mitigation of that site to protect it in the best way possible, to avoid it, or to disinter remains if that is the case, if that's out of necessity. There's other laws, there's other federal laws that also help support Native graves, including the Archaeological Resources Protection Act. That's another important piece of federal legislation.
Is one of the challenges here for the Shinnecock Nation that this land in question is not on the reservation?
That is problematic. What it does is, and throughout the country, we have this checkerboard protection scheme for land and the environment. So if it's not federal or tribal land, then it falls under state and local laws. But New York State has some protective laws on these kind of cases. So I kind of take point with some of the things that are local government staff said earlier today.
It's interesting because it's my understanding that New York once had a law that made it illegal to tamper with ancient grounds that are off-reservation land. That was never put into use, therefore it fell off the books, and now leaving New York as one of only four states that does not have protections in place for graves found on private land. Are you saying there are some ways that the Shinnecock Nation can get some support at the state level?
And I believe they've been trying. The local government is required to follow the environmental quality review. They're supposed to be doing an environmental assessment of the property before any type of permitting is given. So before that developer did anything with that land, the local government was permitting that activity. And it's at that point, that early point prior to any development, that the local government really has a lot of control to either decide to protect archaeological and other important items that may be uncovered in an environmental assessment or not. And the New York State Historic Preservation Office offers a lot of technical support protocols for securing and protecting archaeological sites. And what it looks like is that the local government didn't choose to avail itself of those processes and procedures. In fact, I'm not quite sure of its seeker process, but it had an opportunity before any disturbance of the ground to make sure that those sites were protected and that the tribe was involved in the protection.
Is part of the problem that the regulations or the laws don't have any real teeth? There's real no punitive aspect to them?
That is true, and I think that's true across the country. This is not just occurring here in Southampton, but it occurs in many places across the country. When it comes to state and private lands, we really have a checkerboard system of protection, which will protect federal and tribal lands in a much much stronger way than it will in state and private lands. So you'll have extremely important, significant archaeological discoveries that are not protected for science, that are not protected for a tribal involvement or tribal cultural reasons. So you have a lot of sites that go unprotected. And so much history about our country and the indigenous peoples that have been here, who are still here, that we know nothing about because of this kind of haphazard way of protecting archaeological sites.
Well, if you're just tuning in, we're talking with Attorney Shannon O'Loughlin, and we're talking about how different communities handle the discovery and preservation of Native American remains and culture. If you'd like to join in the conversation, you can email us at tfs@wshu.org or message us on Facebook at Full Story WSHU. Joining me now is Misha Johnson. She is the Shinnecock representative on the Suffolk County Native American Advisory Board. Misha, welcome to The Full Story.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Tell me about this board.
So I am actually currently a student at Stony Brook University. I'm pursuing my master's degree in the field of social work. And before I got to school, I decided that I wanted to find out about what kind of advisory boards were in place for the Native American communities within Suffolk County, and there were none. So, you know, after doing some research, I identified some legislation that was created, and I heard you had Jay Schneiderman on earlier, and this, interestingly enough, this legislation was created by Jay Schneiderman and a legislator at the time, Kate Browning. And so it's my understanding that during that time, it was about 2009, we weren't really interested in having this advisory board. So I kind of helped to revitalize that legislation, and we got myself and some other members of the Montaukit tribe, the Setauket tribe, and the Uncochug tribe. We got together and we decided that this was something that we wanted to do and pursue. And so, hence the creation of the board.
And what does the board do? What is the role of the board?
So the role of the board is really to identify the challenges associated with being a Native American within Suffolk County. So we talk about things such as health care, the criminal justice system, education, all these different things that our communities are confronted with, you know, and have not really the best access to.
I know that there have been rallies and protests over the past week with regard to development that's currently going on in the Shinnecock Hills area. What is the advisory board's position on those protests?
Well, of course, we're in strong support of the protests because, you know, anytime something happens to one tribe, more than likely it happens to all of us. We all are impacted by, you know, the desecration of things like the grave site. So we're certainly in support of it.
And we hope that we can help to facilitate the creation of county legislation. So as Jay was talking about, yeah, there absolutely should be some legislation created on the local level, but also within the state and the county. You know, we have to cover our bases.
Yeah, Shannon, let me turn to you. Where do you think regulation is most effective? At what level? At the municipal level, the county level, the state level, the federal level?
I think they all buttress one another, right? But to have a piece of national legislation that treated archaeological sites or sensitive archaeological sites in the same way throughout our country, to protect it for indigenous peoples as well as for scientific purposes and as part of our national cultural heritage, I think it would be significant to have a national law that gave equal attention to archaeological sites. But you need local processes and you need local relationships in order to implement any kind of legislation, whether it's at the federal or state or local level. You've got to have those relationships. And that's one thing that's so puzzling here is you have the nation telling Southampton, these are our sites, these are where they are, we need you to help us protect them. And from what I see, by the way, the local government is carrying on its processes and its protocols, it's just choosing not to. It's not even trying to build a relationship that could really be valuable to Southampton. And it sure would correct a lot of historical and colonial anger and violence at a people that do not deserve it.
I know, Misha, that is one of the goals of the Suffolk County Native American Advisory Board, and that is establishing these relationships to develop a greater understanding of the Shinnecock Nation. I even read that members of the tribe have shown up where there's been a question whether remains have been dug up, and those immediate people on site aren't really even aware of what the problem potentially could be. So do you think there's a lack of communication from the top down to those people who are out in the field from the Suffolk County point of view?
Sure, absolutely. And what I'm noticing just being a part of this advisory board is that, you know, and I'm going to use some social worker terms here, is that, you know, we as Native American people, we are what you call like very closed systems. And so what I'm finding is that a lot of people aren't even aware of how we operate, how we function as indigenous peoples. And, you know, the other thing that I wanted to point out, too, is like, you know, we're really asking for just equal treatment. You know, so, for example, if somebody were to find remains of Civil War veterans, would those remains get the same respect and honor as what we're getting? Probably not, you know? So, and that's all we're asking for. It's like, you know, people, if you find these remains and you do find out that they are the remains of indigenous communities, why aren't there policies and protocols in place to where we can receive the same equal treatment as other ethnic groups?
When you see issues that have been going on as long as these issues here have quite often the courts get involved. And Shannon, you've represented tribes in court. Have you seen cases similar to what the Shinnecocks are fighting for on Long Island?
Yes. I can't say I've been involved in a court case or litigation regarding this, but we've definitely seen it play out in other places. For example, recently at Standing Rock, the construction of the Dakota Access Pipeline, destroying graves and sacred sites. This is mm-hmm. an issue that is all over Indian country, all over the United States, and it plays out in various ways, most of the time with not a lot of attention. And I've seen and worked with tribes where construction has thrown the ancestors in with the other fill and rocks and soil, and has not respected them. So I think the first thing that really needs to happen before any court case is public education, that tribal nations, we are here, we want to protect our ancestors, and we want you to help us do that. And sometimes laws will help us do that, but the first step, I think, is education and making sure that our rights are preserved through education.
And I know, Misha, in doing a little background reading, tribal people in the United States seek peaceful, my understanding is, peaceful solutions to these problems. How has that helped? Or maybe it's worked against the tribal nations in achieving the goals that they're seeking to achieve.
Well, I think that the peaceful solutions that we're looking for is because, you know, we're just here to reclaim what rightfully belongs to us, you know. And so, yeah, that it should be peaceful. And the other part of that, too, is like that's all we know. We don't have the finances to, you know, be anything but peaceful, you know. And so doing things in a very diplomatic way to where we can attract the attention of outsiders who may not know what we're going through. And so, you know, no, we don't have a means by which we can, you know, hire mob bosses and, you know, rough anybody up. We don't have access to that kind of justice, you know. So we do what we know.
And Shannon, the lack of funding, what impact has that had on Native Americans and pursuing either reclaiming property, protecting grave sites? What kind of impact has that had?
Right. I think the priority for many tribal nations, and there's 573 federally recognized tribes and about 300 other tribal groups across the United States and Alaska, and I think the number one priority is economic development. And so securing the resources for your people for basic human services that is often, always not provided fully by the federal government through treaties and other federal laws. So usually those are the issues of priority. Graves protection often, at times, tribes don't have the capacity to deal with the stacks and stacks of environmental reviews, consultations, requests, and the like, to be able to address these issues fully. And that's why I think it would be very important to have some type of strong state legislation or strong national legislation that would equalize how these issues are dealt with, so that developers and other interested parties know what game they're getting into. They know what the risks are. They know what the expenses will be if they find out there's a sensitive area.
All right.
And so tribes have a consistent process that they can follow.
Shannon O'Loughlin is the executive director and attorney at the Association on American Indian Affairs. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
As well as Misha Johnson, a Shinnecock representative on the Suffolk County Native American Advisory Board. Thanks for being with us today on the show. Sabrina Garone is our engineer. Our associate producers are Fatu Sangari, Roberta Rojas, Desiree Diorio, and Sabrina Garone. I'm Rebecca Saran in for Ron Ropiak. Thanks for being part of today's Full Story.